Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. 5 o'clock hour. More NFL, more college football on the way. Remember, 4 o'clock hour brought to you by our friends at Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the number. Offices in Southern Nevada. Four different spots, including where we do our Wednesday shows, often at the Battleborn Broadcast Center. The office in Summerlin. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. 766-1400 is the number. Coming up, proof once again that I'm not good at this. Not good. I don't know what goes viral. I don't know what the hooks are. I'm old. I still don't get it. I'm an idiot. Or maybe I did get it. Now I'm just an old, doddering fool. But one of the defensive backs said something at the press conference yesterday, UNLV defensive backs. And I was like, okay, I get what he's saying. Like, probably shouldn't say that. But watch how viral this goes. I mean, about as viral as you're going to get, you know, UCLA trash talk going. But it's starting to take off. So we'll get into that and who said it and what he said with Caleb Herring in just a few minutes. So, stories of the weekend. Last night closed out with Bill Belichick getting embarrassed, 48-14. He looked lost. The players looked lost. A lot of mocking. But, you know, in college football, and it happens in the NFL, but especially in college football, I guess there's an NFL tie here too, because really the reason that people are on Belichick is because of the way he acted throughout his career as an NFL coach, how the Patriots fans acted like arrogant jackasses. And then when Tom Brady left, things started to go south. And then, frankly, no one wanted Bill Belichick in the NFL if he wanted to be anything beyond a coach and be a personnel guy, be the GM, have all the control. So to college football, and there were some people who were like, oh, it's easy, man, easy peasy. It's going to kill it there. Didn't happen in the opener. Now, the other one coming out of the weekend that people are just thrilled about, and I am, because I get tired of the freaking pablum over the SEC. Good conference. Generally three elite programs. There's been about five. And then the rest of the conference is solid. But it doesn't mean they're unbeatable. And then there's also cycles in sports. Listen, at Nebraska, when Tom Osborne was there, unreal. But Tom Osborne is not going to coach until he's 114 years old, just like Nick Saban was not going to coach until he was 85 years old. Great coaches move on. And while programs have traditions, a lot of it is because of the coach. And nailing that next coach sometimes takes three, four, five hires. Listen, Oklahoma went through some real bad times after Barry Switzer. And it took all the way until Stoops, who was it, John Blake and Gary Gibbs, if I'm remembering names correctly. You know, Nebraska's just been – Frank Solich actually did a good job, but that wasn't enough for them. So then they turned to Pelini. They've had some very mediocre coaches. So Alabama not being national champion contender, unbeaten or one loss every year, Alabama, is not shocking. But we hung a 14 up there, or 13.5. It got to 14.5. And Florida State hosted Alabama. And Alabama took it on the friggin' chin. And I got to tell you, there were a couple of disturbing things that came out of the game. First, listen to Tom Luganville, former college football player and longtime analyst. He was really shocked by Bama and just their grittiness or lack of grittiness.
I think the biggest thing that stood out to me, Jim, is I thought Alabama had effort issues on defense. Even if you're confused or you're not sure, be confused and unsure 100 miles an hour. Find a way to respond. Find a way to effort to the football, strain to the football. You may be wrong. You may be out of place, but you better be hustling and you better get on your horse. What it looked like was one team was moving at full speed and the other team was in slow motion.
I think Florida State kind of beat the enthusiasm out of Alabama. And while they weren't destroyed, it was 31-17. They didn't run the ball. They weren't physical. They got ran on. Another mobile quarterback, just like Diego Pavia last year with Vandy, beat him up in Tommy Castellanos. Listen to Johnny Manziel. This is the other thing. When you're the grand champion, you're the big bully on the block. sometimes you have teams beaten before they even walk on the freaking field. There was a level of intimidation that Bama had. Johnny Manziel's like, I don't see it anymore.
In the past, you walk in face an Alabama team, probably got a little fear. This is Bama, the team that's been a dynasty, the team, you got a little fear. That fear aspect of what Alabama is completely gone. And nobody's scared of them boys, not Vandy, not Kentucky, not nobody. Nobody's walking in and seeing Alabama on the schedule and having any kind of shake, any kind of fear, nothing. They've been getting wiped the last couple years. You say that buyout's deep, but like they're not going to sit here and let this stand for sure.
I would love to guarantee that Kalen DeBoer is not getting fired after this year, that a buyout of $63 million is absurd. But we saw Jimbo Fisher happen. We've seen other coaches like Gus Malzahn, who, by the way, just so happened to be with Florida State running the offense. And Gus Malzahn in the past had pretty good success against Alabama. The limits of college football should never shock you or shock me. So he could go. I think it would be an absurd decision. It's also stupid to talk about right now. It's one game. I think Florida State's going to be a solid team. What do you think, Griffin, after watching them? Is Florida State back? Are they 10 or 11 wins? Because I'd probably say over-under right now, I might set it at 7.5, and that's probably aggressive. This is a good win, but I think they caught Alabama on its heels for some reason.
I'm not going to select them to win the ACC or anything, but I'm going to kind of...
How can you? You had Clemson number two in the country.
I know.
Going in.
I can't overreact. No, it's the same in every sport, especially college football. We saw a lot over this weekend in this first week, week one. You know, a lot of things people weren't expecting, but again, we can't jump the boat and say, yep, FSU is back. It's the national title winning days of FSU. It's back. No. But I definitely think they're miles ahead of where they were from last season, where they had such a hard year, a lot of struggles. I think this season we could see kind of a nice medium. They're not going to go over the top, all of a sudden title contenders, but I think they are a team that needs to be taken serious in the ACC conference going forward, especially with I like the way you say his name. How do you say the quarterback's name? Castellanos?
Tommy Castellanos.
Yeah. I like him a lot. I think they got a solid squad. It all depends on how they look following this big, huge victory in week one.
Florida State coming up. East Texas A&M. I got to be honest. I've never heard of that school before. I haven't done the handicap on that one. Kent State. Then at Virginia. Okay. Then Miami's in town. So that'll be a real litmus test. We'll see what they do against Virginia. The next two should be relatively easy. Pittsburgh, at Stanford, home Wake. Wake can be plucky. Then at Clemson, home VTech, at NC State, and then Florida to close. Yeah, I'll stick with 7.5 wins. Let's bring in Steve Kamm. I don't think he wants to talk about Florida State, but we kind of do before we get to Miami and Notre Dame. Steve, of course, a Miami fan, was on the road to watch the Canes, and we'll get to some fight talk as well. Steve joins us on this special edition of a Tuesday show, Cofield & Company. What's up, Steve?
Guys, hope you had a good weekend.
I had a great weekend. I had texted my buddy Griffin here that weekends when Alabama loses really make America great.
But aren't they becoming less special?
Well, no, not really. No. If they're 6-6 team the next couple of years, then you're right. It'll become ordinary. But after all the bluster last year when they didn't get in the playoff and they were, they got screwed. Okay, let's see what you do this year with a young quarterback. And, game one was a test and they didn't pass it.
Yeah, the alarming thing for Kalen DeBoer, he's 5-5 in his last 10 since they beat Georgia last September 27th or something like that. And I think more than one of them have been to unranked teams, something that rarely happened with the previous coach. And I think the heat is now on. And, guys, if you took away the logos and you didn't know what the preseason rankings were or who even the teams were, it was clear Florida State was the superior team for 60 minutes. So, I mean, people could call it an upset because we have the perception of the point spread and what some of our biases are coming into the season. Florida State played them off their feet.
Florida State can be good. I was just talking to Griffin about the over-under now. I would set it at 7.5. I still think they could I'll say falter. I don't want to crush them because they just had a big win. But let's pump the brakes after week one. Do we need to pump the brakes on Miami? Well, first of all, how was the trip? What was the atmosphere like? I know it was raining almost the whole game.
It was fun. You know, it's funny. The heaviest rain came about 2.5 hours, and I posted it on Twitter. It was pouring. I was like, wow. And everyone was under a tent or inside their car in the tailgate section. You know, during the game, it was kind of like a sprinkle. I wouldn't really call it a drizzle. And I was under the canopy that they built about 6-7 years ago. So none of the fans or most of the fans really didn't feel the weather or the elements all that much. And, you know, these new fields have that new drainage system, so it's not that big of a deal. There was actually reports about 10 days ago that maybe there was a threat of this game being canceled because of the hurricanes and all that other stuff. That never really transpired. But it was an electric atmosphere at Hard Rock Stadium. And even though Mario Cristobal got very, very conservative, Miami found a way to win that game.
For you, what was the biggest narrative of the game on either side?
Number one, that these games, I hate to say it, no longer have the importance they once did because of the expanded playoff system. Even with Texas and Ohio State, there's a chance these two teams can play again in the playoffs. Same thing with Miami Notre Dame. And you can argue if that's a good or bad thing. There used to be a time not that long ago that a loss like this really would be crushing. Now, unfortunately, Steve, I feel as though all these things really do is affect your seeding in the playoffs if you win enough games.
I like that. I thought, you know, an early season loss or even a late season loss, dropping a good team out of title contention was stupid. I think it should be closer to the NFL playoffs. For me, I thought the biggest narrative was the stoutness of the front for Miami. Notre Dame couldn't run and didn't stay committed to the run. And also, the edges for the Canes are ridiculous. Reuben Bain is really good.
Yeah, Reuben Bain last year, his injury 3 plays into the season, and he was never really quite the same guy he was in 2023, had like this ripple effect on the whole defense. And that's the type of player he is. This is his contract year. I do not expect him back next year, and I hope that he doesn't come back next year. I hope he has the type of year where he's going to be a top 10 guy. But I've said for a while, he's probably the best pure football player Miami has had since Sean Taylor in 2003. Wow. He really is that type of guy. Yeah, and they've had some good ones. They've had their share of NFL guys, even though they've been very mediocre. But the true greatness of a player in any sport is, can you elevate others around you? And Reuben Bain at this level can.
Thoughts on Carson Beck?
Solid and sound, good decision-making. He's not going to be as spectacular as Cam Ward, but he will be more consistent in taking the routine play. And both can be very, very effective. And to be fair to Cam Ward, Carson Beck doesn't have to be that guy, because I think this team is much more well-rounded than last year's squad.
I get a real kick when the schools can reach out to their old-timers or all-time greats and get them out to the game. We know Michael Irvin's been very dedicated. He was a lunatic. There were a ton of Cane legends there.
Steve, I didn't notice Michael Irvin there. Was he there?
Yeah. He's crazy.
No. Well, Steve, I don't know if you know the story, but Mario Cristobal actually requested that Michael be at almost every game.
Good.
So when people say it was Michael being a distraction, no, he's not. He's actually playing his role, which is to be the hype man, to be the spiritual leader. And Michael Irvin said, hey, whatever Mario Cristobal wants, I will be there. He was at every game last year, home and away. So this is not Michael trying to take any of the attention away from it. He just has a great passion for the university, and specifically the football program. He is really into it. And it's great. I was actually at a VIP alumni function where I got to meet a lot of the players from the 80s. I've known some of them for a while. I got to meet some new ones. It was a great time. I can safely say this. I don't think there's a group of former players in terms of like football alumni that care as much about the program years after they graduate quite like Miami.
Well, and so many guys in the past Hurricane teams got to play as freshmen. They were impact players. And I saw the graphic you retweeted from On3 talking about Bryce Underwood, Malik Washington, the quarterback at Cal. And, you know, Malachi Toney had a real impact in that game as a freshman from the area.
Yeah, and Steve, this is the interesting thing. He's actually really should be a senior in high school. He reclassified. I think that seems to be the new trend because kids want to get to the NIL. And probably some of them want to get to the NFL a little sooner. I'll make a prediction right now. I think he's going to lead the team in catches out of the slot. He's going to be a really good replacement for Xavier Restrepo. Him and Carson Beck seem to have a real good chemistry. To talk to people that have had regular access to practice, they will tell you that he was going to be a day one starter and a day one impact player.
Steve Kim is with us, Snack Nutrition. Find him up on Twitter at SteveKim323. I got to talk Belichick in North Carolina, but I got to tell you, the line of the weekend coming out of it was from Whitlock, quote, can he lead young men when he's chasing young women? Does this come down to a question of morals and ethics with Belichick, or is it something even bigger than that, like too many transfers and maybe not enough keen eyes on bringing in good personnel?
Well, hold on. You don't think bringing in 70 players was a bit much?
I know you were joking. I think, because I've seen it happen here, and I know it's a lower level with UNLV, but the last coach who was here, Barry Odom, brought in turnovers roster like 53 and 55. But here's what he did. He also understood that you can't S-can everyone who's around, and he was really smart in keeping around like 25 guys. And I have a feeling Belichick and Lombardi went in there and they're like, 6 wins a year ago. Everyone get the hell out. So 70 is probably too much.
Right, and they lost some of their best players. Yeah. I know there's an edge rusher, Bo Atkinson. I believe he went to Ohio State. I saw him in the game Saturday. I think here's the issue. Number one, TCU is good, and Steve, we talked about this. The Big 12 has as good a quarterback play top to bottom in their conference as anybody. Yeah. I'll stand by that, and Josh Hoover is one of those guys. Sonny Dykes runs a really good program. I like TCU. I think they're going to be a Big 12 contender. But I thought it was funny after that first drive, you literally had national pundits crowning Belichick as being a great college coach. 45 minutes later, it was like a punchline. And I think the question is this, and me and Whitlock talked about it. The question, I think it's a little unfair to say, is Belichick going to get fired or quit before the end of the year? I disagree. I think the question is now, will he stick around a few years for the rebuild? Because it's obvious, even with that relatively light schedule, Steve, that is a multi-year rebuild. You could bring in 100 players. I just don't think it's that easy.
It's not easy. Yeah, it's not easy, and especially in the ACC and against a quality opponent. That's why, like you said, some of the people out there are like, well, he's the greatest coach in the history of the NFL. He's going to go to college and, you know, mop the floor with him. Not if he doesn't have the players. And the portal is, you know, you saw it last year. Miami got incredible dividends from the portal. But at the end of the year, things started to fade a little bit. It doesn't mean the portal didn't work, but it is hard to win when you have that many new guys on the roster. I thought you and Whitlock had Steve Kim's with us. He's part of Fearless. I thought you guys had an interesting discussion on are more people turned off by Belichick's grossness with a 24-year-old or just simply rooting because he was just such a horse's ass as a winner in the NFL?
I think there's a lot of both. And look, if you're a fan of the NFL, there's not that many people outside of Boston that like the Patriots. They probably hate them in New York. Right, every other AFC East city.
We hate them here.
We hate them here. So right there, that means 31 other teams hate them. Right, so that's a lot. That's a large part of America. Then you have the media, Steve. I don't know about you. I've been binge watching some Boston sports radio shows that are on YouTube. They are relishing this. There will be no closer or more fanatical watchers of UNC football than Boston sports media. I could send you some of the links. These guys act like they're happier than they are, I think, for Red Sox World Series.
Yep. If you haven't watched Fred Tucher, he's one of the lead sports talk hosts there. He annihilates Belichick. Straight out. He's like, that guy was such a J.O. most of the time he was here. It's good to see him getting this now.
No, it is. And the access that's now being limited, like UCLA is having an issue because Deshaun Foster is closing things down. And I'm thinking, well, LA almost really does not care about UCLA football. You're just making it worse.
Right.
And at UNC, I guess Belichick's doing the same thing. He's giving these, you know, monosyllabic answers. You can do that when you win, Steve. You know the way the game works.
Yep.
But once you lose, you open up that door for you know what.
Yep, exactly. Okay, we got to look ahead to fight week next week. A hype of, we'll call it fight weeks. I saw the grand arrival was announced. Canelo and Crawford will be here next Tuesday. Fontainebleau, interesting. 5:30. That'll be televised live on Netflix. I'm curious about this. What are you hearing about ticket sales in this monstrous stadium here in Vegas.
I'm hearing the tickets are very expensive, and they're not moving. And I have a friend of mine, Jim Boone, who's part of the owner of KO Tickets. He's the most trusted source in the business, as far as I'm concerned. He has his doubts. He's always had his doubts. I could list a ticket for $1 billion for any event, right?
Right.
Right. But what does that really mean if it doesn't sell?
Yeah.
Right? So I have my doubts about the veracity that thing, this thing's on track for a sellout. And Steve, I'll be honest, I'll probably be there throughout the week, maybe from Wednesday on. I might leave Saturday morning to go to Coach JB's to watch college football.
What?
And just turn, yeah. Why? Steve, you know the way it works with boxing credentials. We're put out further and further out from the ring now. I might be watching the fight on top of the roof at Allegiant, the way they treat the media. So I don't want to miss the Miami University of South Florida game. That's a huge game.
Yeah.
Florida bat. I can't miss that.
Yeah, I was going to say, trust me, if they built a fine stadium, but if you're upstairs in the press box, the Raiders and UNLV press box, it is a long ways away from a boxing ring. And while they did a decent job with the screens, it's not like the Jerry Dome. It's not like SoFi. If you're upstairs in the press box, if that's open for this, I don't think you're going to be able to see very well.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, my sources tell me that Turki Alaşık is giving every media member in there a Hubble telescope.
Now, is that a fresh line, or have you been using that all week?
I've been hiding that one. It's like a great play. I've been saving that flea flicker just for the right time and place. Thanks for the setup there.
I can't take freebies. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Turki. I can't take freebies, but I got the joke.
I can, so please keep offering them up.
There you go. We need to go back to the days of Don King promoting fights where we could all walk in and get a beer, get a little malt liquor after a fight.
You know what? As far as I'm concerned, some of these fights are so boring. I think we should be able to get a beer during the fight.
We need to get drunk, right, on a little St. Ides. Steve, have a good week, man. I appreciate you being a little flexible this week, and we will talk to you during the actual fight week next week.
Steve, maybe I'll drop by. Let me know.
There you go. Steve Kim. I wasn't blowing him off. I hadn't thought about that part. But, yeah, we probably should link up. And we'll have to figure out where we are on Monday. It'll be interesting. 364-1100, 364-1100. I was going to mention it, but I'm like, I can't yet. UNLV and UCLA, Bruins and Deshaun Foster, shutting down the media, are going to be here. There is now some bulletin board material if you believe in stuff like that. This is going to be a very hyped game. UCLA, a slight favorite at 2.5. It's a 5 o'clock start next Saturday. Check that. I guess this Saturday, September 6th. UNLVtickets.com is where you can get your Rebel tickets for the UCLA game. Game is at Allegiant Stadium. We got a pair right now. 364-1100, 364-1100.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Cup on ESPN Las Vegas.
Big Saturday on the way with UNLV and UCLA going at it at 5 o'clock. Earlier in the day, our buddy Mark McMillan will be holding his first wing-eating contest, working with Ace Hardware Stores. There's 4 stores in the area. They're going to be all set up with a wing-eating contest at noon on Saturday, Green Valley Parkway and Warm Springs. You got to be there by 11:45. You can be in the wing-eating contest. We're going to be in it with a show rep. Griffin, I guess he's too busy. He's got a show from 9 to 11. Then he's got his own remote to go to from 3 to 5. JVT has stepped up to participate in the wing-eating contest. Naked City Wings will be eaten with Mark McMillan's Sweet Heat sauce. $500 gift card is up for grabs from Ace Hardware. Other cool prizes. Hit any of the 4 participating Ace Hardware stores for more information. The grand prize is going to be 2 tickets to the Monday Night Football game with the Raiders on the 15th. How about that? Caleb Herring is in on this Tuesday. What's up, Caleb?
Nothing. Now I'm hungry. Now I listened to that Mark McMillan plug about the wings. I love wings, as you know, Steve. It is a pastime for me. I have this desire to try wings at every place we go to and see which are the greatest. So you'll have to let me know how Mark's are. Maybe I'll have to get with that sweet sauce that he makes, because, you know, we all respect Chef Mark and his taste. So
if you were to stand,
I'm now hungry.
If you were to stand over Mark as he was making the wings, what would you demand in terms of the crunch and the wetness?
it there needs to be a balance. You know me, I like a wet and crunchy wing, and it's a very hard thing to pull off.
Yes.
But if you do it properly, and I've had them before, you can have a wet and crunchy wing. The key is, if you cook wings right, or really any fried food right, the reheat value diminishes. And that's probably one of the signs that I know that it tasted good initially, was that you can't reheat it to simulate what it tasted like when it was cooked fresh. You know what I mean? And that's with a wet and crispy wing, it can never be reheated back to its original value. So, but that would be my number one advice. You got to strike that balance between wet and crispy.
You're on the road in Houston. We'll get to the food report, the broadcaster bites here in a couple minutes. But first, 38-21 win, 31-7 going to the fourth quarter. We'll get to some of the errors by the Rebels, but they did have a pretty good offensive game, 404 yards in total offense. The quarterback play through the first two games has been really good. Why is it?
I think it's efficient. I think they've done something that that I've kind of clamored for, I'll say, but they've passed well on early downs. They've had early down success throwing the ball. And they've mixed in personnel to create some of that easy access on first and second downs, but also just taking advantage of the cushions that are given. And I think this is the maturity of a quarterback with experience in Anthony Calandria, number one, just taking what the defense gives him. But number two, the creativity of the offense. And this is what we talked about with the spread offense and the balance of it and using formations and personnel to manipulate defenses more and take what they give you based on that. I think that's what we've seen early from this offense. The ability to do that and using personnel groupings and early down throwing. You typically get softer coverages on early down. And the way that the games have started, both of the first two games, UNLV passing has just taken advantage of those free access releases, those easy pitching catches that are 5 and 6 yard gains. It don't seem like much at the time, but they get the pass game rolling. They establish a rhythm. They lengthen drives. There's been a couple of long extended drives that drove, 70 plus yards down the field for the Rebel offense, which kind of shows you the kind of rhythm they can get into. And then obviously you have to just credit the quarterback and the receivers, Jaden Bradley to be specific at receiver, as well as Anthony Calandria, just kind of wheeling and dealing, taking what the defense gives them, not necessarily locking in on targets, but just understanding what the coverage is allowing for him to do as a quarterback. And outside of really a couple decisions in the early going of the season, he's been pretty much spot on with his decision-making as a passer.
You mentioned Bradley, who's emerging as a star in the Mountain West Conference. First two games, 12 catches, 256, a touchdown, averaging 21 yards a catch. Had a couple of deep shot catches in this one. And I love the way Dan Mullen talks, because he's just very open. And he said, listen, I don't know why Jaden Bradley, it really hadn't worked out the first 4 years of his career. He was at Charlotte and Pitt and here at UNLV. And he was okay for the Rebels, more of a special teams player. And he said, really, it's from the neck up. And he told the story of, early on, Bradley was kind of open to listening and he was doing something. And Mullen's like, yeah, that's not going to work. So you want to keep doing that. It's not going to work. But Bradley was open to it. And I think really all players should be like that. But especially guys who feel like they haven't reached their pinnacle, like you got to listen to people.
There's a sign of maturity on one side by Jaden Bradley for being able to realize, hey, maybe I am wrong. Maybe I do need to adjust, and this isn't the first person saying it to me, so maybe I have to make an adjustment. That's growth. That's maturity. That's a young man on his way to becoming a full-grown man, right? And those of us who are deep into our adulthood now understand that there's a certain amount of humility that comes with responsibility, right? You have to be willing to say I was wrong. And not just say you were wrong, but make the corrections to change. I think Jaden Bradley's in that phase of life right now, which is good for him as a young man developing. You mentioned another thing, though, and I think something that's important to mention, this is Dan Mullen's coaching style and his leadership style. There's kind of this blunt honesty that doesn't, for whatever reason, come off as mean. I think he presents it as, kind of charismatically and goofy almost and but it's receivable. You're able to digest it as the person receiving the message because it's real. It seems authentic, and he's not blowing smoke. And it's not just coaches talk when he tells you something like, hey, if you're going to do that, it ain't going to work. And players, I think, gravitate to that. And you could see it in sort of the nature of the recruiting that he's done. And the guys that are in similar situations to Jaden Bradley, where maybe their career for the last 2 or 3 years, for whatever the reason is prior to this, wasn't getting any traction. But then you get him, you get guys like Amaris Brown, who you have been around college football for a while and just really haven't popped. But all of a sudden they're having, you know, these breakout performances under Dan Mullen. And it's kind of because of that blunt, charismatic honesty that he presents the game with. And if you accept it the right way, I think it's a marriage that some players get along with. And it, I think, like I said, the recruiting that he's done in year one with UNLV and the kind of players he's brought in, you see that kind of turning around. And obviously Jaden Bradley was a guy who was a holdover, but it's the same story. The Mullen message has just worked for a lot of guys, and hopefully it continues to work.
By the way, didn't have to be a holdover. They could have told him to walk, and that is one of the keys when you bring in 50-plus new players. You have to pick the right ones to stick around. Odom was really good at that, and Bradley looks like a guy that Mullen has nailed. Dan Mullen, after the game, was quick to mention, and in the press conference on Monday, was quick to mention, we're still making a lot of mistakes. And he, again, he's very blunt about this. I want your take, what you saw on at least one of the two plays where the Sam Houston State got a 59-yard passing touchdown, a 53-yard run. The run was on a 4th-and-1, and you're starting to drill it into me, and I hear it on the broadcast, gap integrity. What did you see on their big run where that 31-7 game could have easily turned into whatever, 50-something to 14, but instead you get that quick hit because of missed assignments on the line, right?
Yeah, gap integrity is something that is quintessential to run defense, and this is in all phases or every level of football. There's a couple different ways you can get run over, at, like where a team dominates the trenches. One is they're just more physical. They move you out of gaps. They move the line of scrimmage, and that's how they affect their ground game. The other way is to have gap control, and a lot of teams use gap control when they're smaller, maybe undersized, so they have to use leverage plays and things like that. Well, when you have a defense like UNLV's that has a tendency to be spread out, like you have lighter boxes, you have more DBs on the field, those kinds of things, there's a lot more space to operate with. So naturally, your run game becomes kind of sort of gap-based, and your run defense becomes the gaps in the defensive assignments become pivotal, right? And in a situation like the 4th-and-1s where you're selling out to stop the run and you're sending the house essentially, if you miss on the gaps up front, there's no second level of defenders because all the linebackers are already, you know, getting up the field. So those kind of big plays happen. So I think UNLV just got out of their gaps on that 4th-and-1 run. And once that first wave of defenders was beat, there's just nobody in the secondary because typically when you bring an all-out blitz or bring in linebackers downhill like that on 4th-and-1, you're playing man behind it. So the DBs are running with the receivers and there's really nobody back on the second level to stop those kind of big plays. But it's unfortunate because outside of those two plays, the 4th-and-1 pass, the quick out, again, it gets an all-out blitz man coverage, you essentially have no help. And those two plays were all of the offense essentially for Sam Houston, in the second half. And outside of that, if you take those two plays away, the Rebels played a stellar three quarters of football on defense. But it takes one assignment, one missed assignment, and, you know, it's Katie bar the door. So that's, I think, what happened in those two plays. And still things, like you said, to be coached up on and tighten up as the season progresses.
You know, can I tell you and tell the audience, I think they have, if he can hold it together, man, I think they have an emerging star in one of their defensive linemen who just came in during the summer, and that's in Tumiche Adeleye, who was, looking back now, when he came out of high school at Katy, Texas, he was the number 12 defensive lineman overall in the class. He landed at Texas A&M, then Michigan State, then Texas State. He is a legit 6'3.5", 275 pounds. He's playing inside and outside. He hit a sack down the stretch where he was just friggin' unstoppable. And they came to the sideline, and he was just going crazy. I'm like, my God, if they can wrangle this dude, he has so much talent. And like I said, he's playing inside and outside. But I think he was also on the field during that long run, and he got really mad, and they had to calm him down for like 5 minutes. He's so intriguing.
He is, and he's explosive at his position, right? Sometimes you look at guys, and yeah, you've got the size and the physical makeup of somebody who can dominate at the position, especially on the D-line. He has some versatility, like you mentioned. He can play inside and outside, but it's the explosion off the line of scrimmage that I think pops to me when he's out on the field, and that sack that you're talking about, that late in the game kind of iced things out. I think it ended up hurting Hunter Watson, like put him out, like knocked him out of the game. So the way he gets off the line of scrimmage, and I commented to Matt Neverett on the broadcast that sometimes pressure is good, but it's even more beneficial when the pressure is immediate. And when you can get immediate pressure without necessarily tricking the defense or adding extra bodies. And that's what he was able to do on that sack, was he instantly won his one-on-one with his explosion, and was in the quarterback space before any sort of reaction could even take place. And that's, I think, what Coach Mullen was talking about a little bit, as far as in game one, in week zero, they were a little slow off the ball. They didn't have that anticipation, that burst at the line of scrimmage when the snap happened. But he showed on that play and several other plays that he has that explosion. He's a guy that plays with his emotions, and I think this is going to be my quote of the year from Monkey Cooper. I've mentioned it several times. He's a guy that plays with emotions, but you don't want to let it become emotional. And I think you mentioned it, that fourth down play, he felt some sense of responsibility to it, and the emotions started to become emotional. And he quickly got his teammates around him, reined him back in, and then was able to recover and make a big play later in the game with that sack. So he looks to have a disruptive year on the defensive front, and it was good to see, along with the rest of the D-line, creating some pressure against Sam Houston.
Caleb Herring, breaking down UNLV football, game coming up against UCLA. The Bruins are in town. Big Ten squad now at Allegiant Stadium with a 5 p.m. kickoff. Ted Wien's pregame goes at 4 o'clock. Quote, honestly, nothing really sticks out to me about him. That was Amaris Brown about Nico Yame Lieva at UCLA. When I heard it, the way I took it was he kind of got stumped by the question. And really, I don't think he was trying to be mean-spirited, but it's going to go viral now. What do you think about what he said? And I wonder if Dan Mullen's like, come on, you got to be careful what you're saying. Because my guess is Mullen's like, I don't care.
I would guess he's in the I don't care camp. I think if they need bulletin material to get up for us, then okay, let's see what they got. That's probably what he would say. But I also think I agree with you with what you're saying. I don't think he intended it to be a shot or some sort of slight to Nico. I think he was just answering the question how he heard it. And he was like, it's a game. Similar to the way everybody's, hyping this up to be a big game and get up for the game. This is a big player. It's a talked about player. And he's like, well, I've played against other big players. And in the mind of a competitor, even, I take it this way. Like, I'm a good player too. So it's not like I'm afraid of what he's capable of. He plays quarterback. I play DB. That's what I've seen from him on film. And there's things I got to do to, take advantage of his weaknesses, and he's going to try to take advantage of mine. So that's how I interpreted it, but it's going to be on the bulletin. It's already on social media. It's making its way around. I just, like you said, I think the question necessarily wasn't interpreted the way that maybe the reaction will be. So it'll make for a good storyline, though, leading into the game and see if there's any chirping going back and forth. Maybe some other potential storylines, like Alani McAhaley being a former Bruin and kind of going through that, his experience there and what he has to bring to the table. So we'll see if the storylines start to pop as the week gets going.
Let's hit some of the other big games from the weekend. Texas, Ohio State, Dan Orlovsky. Imagine having a generational talent at quarterback and having the training wheels on all game.
It's a fanboy comment is what I would say initially. That's somebody who's a fan of Arch Manning who wants to see him succeed. Maybe he's overlooking the team and the trust in Sarkisian, who's been doing this for a lot longer than Arch Manning as far as college football and coaching at a high level. I think if you perceive that there was training wheels on with Texas's, I think you may be forgetting that the training wheels are there for a reason and they're for the safety of a young rider. And a quarterback in his first start in the horseshoe against one of the best teams in college football, if not the best team, they're ranked as the best team now. There should be some training wheels in a tightly contested ball game. But if you look at the offense and you look at what Arch Manning did, they actually generated 3 explosive plays, which was more than Ohio State in that ballgame, who only had 1 explosive play. And he threw the ball 30 times. And I don't necessarily know that equates to training wheels. So it was a 14-7 slugfest or defensive struggle between two of the top teams in the country. I think anybody who doesn't think Ohio State is a great defense needs a reality check on what great defense looks like. But I think Arch Manning will be fine. I think Sarkisian will be fine. And I think people need to relax with the fanboying over Arch Manning and just let him develop as a quarterback. His first start, he'll get better. And there'll be plenty of opportunities for him to prove the hype wasn't completely fictitious.
Follow Caleb at Caleb Herring _. I don't know what quarterback or what game you're watching, but I saw you tweet, so many young quarterbacks today with terrible mechanics. This is the generation of private trainers, and you said more. What were you watching and what were you reacting to?
I initially was actually reacting to some of Arch Manning's habits that I saw come out in the game. The sidearm fadeaway throw, there's a couple that he made that were just unnecessary. So that was one. I think that was actually when I sent the tweet out, possibly, or the post rather, on X, I should say. But there was several games. It seemed like every game I went to, there was I think I was watching Hawaii and Alejandro, and his performance, his mechanics in the pocket, obviously as a Mountain West guy, was kind of breaking that stuff down. But just seeing kind of the lack of fundamental, and you know, people make extraordinary plays, but there was a time where you got to get the fundamentals down. And if you watch the greatest of all time, and Tom Brady, there was nothing flashy about his game, but he was elite at quarterback because he did the simple things right. And that I love hearing Dan Mullen say that of his quarterback, that's what he's coaching. He doesn't want them to reach for the extraordinary plays. He wants to make the 5-yard completion that keeps the offense on schedule. I didn't see enough of that throughout the first weekend of sports. And you could see the position's fundamentals sort of deteriorating as the big play and the explosive play dominate the game. So I just wish that we could get back to fundamentals first and building it from the ground up.
Time for an abbreviated broadcaster bites. The time was limited on the road in H-Town. Caleb Herring is with us. We wound up hitting a New Orleans Cajun-themed joint on Thursday night. We hit a barbecue place called the Pit Room on Friday. I will tee it up for you. I assume you want to hit the Pit Room.
Yeah, the Pit Room is, I don't want to say life-changing, Steve, but it is up there with the highest of quality barbecues that I have experienced in my young life. And any barbecue place that you have brisket on the menu, that's the thing you have to order, especially if it's your only time going. And the brisket did not disappoint. I was thrilled about it. It had the feel, the smell, the smoky odor that you want from a barbecue joint. It was fantastic by my measurements. And one of my big things about barbecue spots, you got to try the beans, right? The beans had brisket in them, and that's all I'll say about it. A little bit of spice, a little kick to it. But if you know beans, you know that's the way they're done. So the Pit Room, as far as our PFF, our Pro Foodie Focus ranking, I think mid to high 80s,
wow,
which is extraordinarily
that's freaking
high grading.
Anthony Calandria territory. What are you doing? What else did you get on your plate? Did you get another meat?
Yeah, so I ended up getting the brisket with the pulled pork, and they give you a piece of white bread, as all barbecue joints should. So I ended up turning my pulled pork into a sandwich with their house sauce on top of it. Mm. I got the baked beans, as I mentioned, and I got the potato salad with the mustard base. So that is, potato salad isn't done everywhere, and I typically don't trust the potato salad unless I know who made it. but this place had good potato. It just looked good in the dish, as they were serving it. So I picked it as my side, and it turned out to be a fantastic barbecue meal. And like I said, I made the pulled pork into a pulled pork sandwich with the rye bread. They had the paper towel rolls at the table, which is the sign of a true barbecue joint. I don't trust a barbecue spot that doesn't have paper towels at the table.
I'm glad we could exercise some demons, because last year we were denied the Pit Room because the remote tech took the car and decided to play frisbee golf for 3 hours, and we couldn't get into the Pit Room quickly enough. So there was a lot of anger sharks swimming the last year or so. It turned out beautifully. Caleb, we are really up against it. I'm going to let you go. I will see you later in the week at the Dan Mullen Radio Show on Thursday.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
I found myself doing something really annoying. When someone speaks, Because you know I'm very big on audio and video. You don't need to say, mm-hmm. But I was groaning a lot during the food conversation with Caleb. A lot. I got to calm down.
You're talking about good food. It's hard to keep it,
just,
you know.
Just in the background. As I've referenced many times before, the movie Fatso with Dom DeLuise. When they start talking about the honey and the jelly donuts and the Reese's peanut butter cups in the jelly donuts and the
It's like the only time I've ever been grossed out by audio.
Greg and I, Salerno and I, played that audio on a Friday, and it was just, it really was gross. But we couldn't contain ourselves.
I wish I could find the food that would force me to have that kind of reaction, that bring that out of
Oh. I don't want to live in Houston. The humidity really is, it's crazy. Like, it wasn't even a super hot night on Friday, but when you get 80 or 90% humidity, it's just rough. And when your body's acclimated to this, the dry heat, it really is true. And also, there's way too much traffic. But there's a lot of good restaurants there. It is a really good food city. And we have, I mean, I could go back there 12 more times and still not hit all the barbecue places I want to hit.
Okay, quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Better food spot, Houston or New Orleans?
New Orleans.
By far.
Yeah, but Houston has their sister cities. So Houston has a lot of Cajun and New Orleans food. So that's why we picked a New Orleans themed place on Thursday night, and that was great too. Now, New Orleans just blows away everything.
How's the barbecue scene in New Orleans? Cajun, obviously, they got it locked down, but barbecue, I feel like it could be a place for some good BBQ.
There is a scene. I don't think I've been to a barbecue place, but the most underrated thing that doesn't get hyped up because it's Cajun, Creole, gets most of the attention, the fried chicken. And I am like a fried chicken junkie. The fried chicken in New Orleans is unbelievable. I told you about the one place I went to, like late night chicken shack, where I went in, I was getting fried chicken, and a prostitute walked in, and she solicited. She was like, "Do you want this?" And she used a stronger word, pointed to her nether region, "or do you want fried chicken?" And I was like, "Fried chicken, baby!" And I went home, and I loved up on that fried chicken. Dang, it was good.